Lovely cushion header. Pacheco!
G'day everyone, welcome to the LFC Couch. This is episode I have no bloody idea because I'm over here in Los Angeles, California. I'm here with James. How are you, James?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you, George?
Very good. And I tell you what, we only met for the first time in person yesterday, didn't we?
That's right, and now we're hanging out on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah. I tell you what, aren't you good? Because you're here with your wife on holiday. aren't you dedicated? We're on the computer, on the laptop here, we're on the beers, not on the beers, but we're just drinking this lovely Big Wave Golden Ale, and we are on top of the world because last night we got to meet the chief executive officer.
Yes, the CEO.
The CEO of Liverpool Football Club, Mr. Peter Moore. And this is an exclusive. I think it's safe to call it an exclusive.
I think it's good to go out there with that message.
I think this is an exclusive because what also happened was after we were done with the night and Peter had this incredible presentation for us, you know, we asked questions and then afterwards we went and we got a photo with him, me and James. Yep. So I said to him, look, do you mind, mate? We just had to do this podcast in Australia called the LFC Couch. It's the largest one in Australia. Didn't want to, you know, shine us up too much, but that's what we are. And I said, you don't mind if we talk about this stuff a little bit because it was really enlightening. He goes, mate, you do whatever you want. I don't know if he said mate. Maybe he did say mate.
I think he said it a few times.
Yeah, yeah. So he said, you know, by all means. And by the way, I went on Twitter just recently. And on Twitter, he actually liked my comment where I said, I guess we've got some really good content for the podcast. And I tell you what, we've been given two lots of blessings from Peter Moore, the man himself. So what you are listening to here, ladies and gentlemen, couchsters out there, people who are just kicking back on the couch in LFC Couchland, we have exclusive Peter Moore information.
Yes, we do.
We do. And so basically what happened was Peter Moore contacted LFC Los Angeles, which is the official supporters club. They call it an OLSC, Official yep. Liverpool Supporters Club. And he said, look, I'm in the area. Do you mind if I drop by and just have a chat to some of the supporters here? And Brian Montano, who is the head of LFC LA. Hello, Brian. He is also a couch member. He's been on the couch before. So anyone who's been on the couch is a couch member. We're talking Bruce Grobbelaar. We're not trying to drop names here, but you know, quite. Anyway. But so Brian said, yeah, by all means, come. And he goes, yeah, do you have a, you know, can I do a PowerPoint presentation? It was incredible. And then Peter Moore rocks up at like 6:30 p.m. at Joxer Daily's, which is the local LFC LA pub. And we watch the games there every day, and it's on at all hours of the morning. We're talking either 3 a.m., 6 a.m. I don't know if I should release this information. I don't think they're allowed to do that. It's okay. Okay. Doesn't matter if we release this information. But he rocked up at the pub, had a pint in his hand, had a couple of drink, you know, a couple of sips of his drink, and said, guys, I'm just going to, you know, just let you know how the club's going, what the health of the club is like. And it was eye-opening, James.
It was absolutely brilliant. It's probably the last thing you probably would have expected to see, but you walked away, I know everyone walked away absolutely amazed with everything that he had to share and contribute to the room.
It's so what I did was I didn't anticipate that we could use this, but as he was talking and he was answering questions and he was engaging, by the way, he was there for 3 hours.
Yeah.
3 hours he's sitting there, the CEO of Liverpool Football Club. This person's been in the room with Jurgen Klopp, with the owners. He is, you know, and by the way, after hearing all the stuff and all the stats after he's come in, he's responsible for a lot of continued success of the club. I won't say responsible for all the success. I'd say for continued success. It was incredible to have someone like that stick around for 3 hours and not just answer questions from supporters, but after the fact, when people went up and got photos with him, they were asking him questions again. Then he had a pint at the bar, had a chat with his wife as well that was there. And then, yeah, it was about just over three hours he would have been there. Incredible, incredible. So as he was talking and doing his presentation, I kept notes because that I sensed an opportunity. And so what me and James are going to do here for all you guys is just give you an insight as to what Peter Moore was going on about. It's incredible, and I took some notes, and I firstly want to address what his presentation was about, because I do have some questions that were pitched from the fans, and that's why I do want to get to that quicker than the actual presentation itself, because the questions from the fans are unfiltered questions, and Peter Moore answered them completely, like, you know, no filter.
No.
He just answered them off the bat. We're talking questions about the sale of Coutinho, about where does money come from, do we have to sell to buy? Where's the new stadium? Guys, I hope I'm getting you guys excited here on the other end of podcast land, because holy crap, he answered the questions. But James, I just want to go through the PowerPoint presentation. We had things like, actually, I'm going to let you say what his... He doesn't call it a hashtag, but it should be. But it was his mantra. It was his tagline. It was like five syllables, six syllables. I don't know what it is, but I'll give you the honor of saying it.
Yeah, thank you very much. No, it was... he said it during his presentation. He said it after his presentation. And every time he said it, it was very powerful. It was what his message was with Liverpool FC. It's local heart, global pulse. And
incredible.
And through his presentation, through what he was telling everyone about what the club does, whether it's local, whether it's in the L postcodes, whether it's what he was doing last night doing presentations, it's about how the club connects on so many different levels. And you see so much especially when you live overseas, whether you're in LA, whether you're back in Australia or anywhere else in the world, you see so much. But when you actually understand the detail and the work that they put in, You can't comprehend. You can't comprehend how much goes in to creating or building the local heart and global pulse message. It's just absolutely brilliant.
The reason why it's so good as well is because he's in a room full of foreign supporters. I mean, there's a lot of expats or a few expats in LA. Obviously, we've got way more expats in Sydney. Obviously, LFC New South Wales, best supporters club on the planet at the moment.
Are you getting paid to say that?
Am I getting paid to say that? I don't know, because I said it last night to Peter Moore himself, and he's like, yeah, and he loved it, and he noticed it. but with all these global supporters, we want to feel like we're part of it. We want to feel part of the club. And I think it's such a great tagline, because it's often something, again, on Twitter where, you know, fans will say, oh, you're not from Liverpool, so it doesn't matter. I always use the example, well, then you can't celebrate Mohamed Salah. If you're not going to accept a fan that comes from overseas, then don't accept a player that comes from overseas. So to that, they always shut up whenever that comes about. But what the presentation, I think, was great, what it was split into, was those two parts of that mantra, of that tagline, of that statement, which was half of it was more or less geared towards what are we doing locally for Liverpool? And the other side was how are we going to connect the global supporter base and link them to the local side of the supporter base. Link those two together, and that's so good as well. The analogy or the articulating that message with local heart, global pulse, because a heart, of course, is the organ, but the heart stops without the pulse. But also, you don't have a pulse without that heart. Both of these, whether it's supporters in Liverpool or those overseas, we can all help each other. And that's the message that Jurgen Klopp has been sending since day one, minute one. And it was great to hear someone like Peter Moore echo that in the flesh, in person, with his incredible presentation.
No, it was just absolutely phenomenal. It really, you feel like you're getting closer to the club. You feel that connection. Everyone,
and that's the point.
Yeah, everyone in that room has a connection to Liverpool FC. There's a dedication, there's an undying love for it, and to be able to stand in that room and listen to Peter Moore deliver such a strong presentation like that and make you feel like you mean everything to the club in so many different ways, it's just absolutely fantastic.
What we might do now is we might get onto the questions that were asked in the in the audience because, I want to get to the unfiltered stuff. Yeah. And then along the way, James and I might remember stuff from the presentation because a lot of the stuff that was great about the presentation was how do they give back to the community? You know, I think that they, with food banks and stuff, all the numbers have gone up. The amount of hungry people that have been fed, the amount of houses that have been taken care of, the amount of people that now have things that they didn't have before, all the numbers were rising and it's great. I mean, look, stats are only as good as what they are shown in front of you, but the fact of the matter is that they were there. So cynical people will say, oh, but it's, what about this and what about this? Well, look, you can only start from a specific point. And judging by the numbers he was giving us, which looks like numbers you give to a stakeholder or a shareholder of a club, and that's what he made us feel like. Yes. He made us feel like that we were, investors in this club. And that's important to make supporters and fans feel like investors. And that's not to say that they want to make us feel like a business proposition. That's to make us feel like we are as important as the people that literally give, the millions and millions, which is what we also do, by the way. Fans do give a lot of the money for the club. But, we're not owners of the club, but they made us feel like owners. But anyway, I think we'll get into these questions. It's great to get these unfiltered questions. This guy screams out. He goes, how does the revenue work? This is an interesting question. So this is question number one that we got to Peter Moore. And again, Peter Moore said, feel free to use all of this stuff because I showed him a few of the questions that I was going to ask and whatnot. And he's going, that's absolutely fine. I mentioned to him the stuff that I want to mention. He's like, nope. Absolutely cool. So this first one was because we've just, this was off the back of record profits for Liverpool. Yes. What are the profits? It was 100, first to top 100 million in a year. 109 million. So he answered that and he said, basically, the reason why those numbers are so high are not only because of the healthy position of the club, but obviously the great business that we're doing in the transfer market. And what was an interesting point that he came up with was when you purchase a player like Alisson, like Fabinho, like Keita, when you purchase them, you only amortize the amount over 3 years. So you're only doing a third of it this year. So this year when we're posting these sort of profits, we're posting the sale of Coutinho as it comes in. So what's that, 140 million or whatever the amount is?
Straight in.
That's instant. Whereas when you are purchasing a player, it's amortized over 3 years. It was interesting you used Bobby Firmino. It's like when we buy him for 30, it's not like we pay 30 or we account for it as 30. It's 10, 10, 10. So that's interesting. For those of you who didn't know how that worked, the accounting rules that Liverpool use are obviously favorable for those massive revenues that we posted. But it also might have also something to do with the way the stages in which transfers are paid. But it's interesting that they do account for revenues immediately. So Coutinho came in straight away. And the next player we sell, I don't know who we're going to sell. It doesn't look like we're going to sell anyone, by the way. But that'll come in immediately. So onwards and upwards with this £109 million profit that we've been posting. The second question that came through, there's going to be lots of questions. He was asked about he was asked about the owners, and this led into Hicks and Gillette. But it's really interesting because people want to know more about Fenway Sports Group, FSG.
Yep.
And this guy knows them very, very well. These are the guys that hired Peter Moore. Now, obviously, people know Peter Moore used to be at EA Sports, Sega before that. He's been in the video game industry. But what's interesting is the way that he described it's Tom Werner and John Henry.
Yep.
They both managed smaller baseball teams, but he said, quote, they both wanted a real baseball team. And that's when they came to 86 years of misery, Fenway Park, the history behind the Boston Red Sox, and they were drawn to that. And we see the similarities between that and Liverpool Football Club, right?
That's exactly it. It was actually really interesting to hear him talk about what the owners did when it came to the Boston Red Sox and Fenway Park, because obviously it's not just about bringing success to the Boston Red Sox, but it was actually, I think, they renovated the stadium and they brought it right up to a beautiful, beautiful stage to play baseball in. And then that, obviously, sort of what they wanted to bring to Liverpool as well. But it's just that we're not quite there yet in terms of the winning aspect. But of course, we look at what they've done with Anfield now. That brand new stadium that they've now created, or the renovation of the main stand, which now looks absolutely fantastic. And I think it was, were they saying it, when the first thing they said when they came in was, why would you want to move away from a place like Anfield?
And there's always the thing of the cynical people will say, well, it was because it was cheaper for them. But look, they did it with Fenway Park and it was successful and people loved it. So if we can just get away from that cynical voice in our head, which is always trying to find the negative in everything, maybe we just take these guys for face value. Why would you want to leave Anfield? Because they've come in and the thing is they buy Boston because it's a real baseball team. They haven't won in so long. And so there's one part of them that's like the male ego part, which is like, well, this hasn't happened in a long time, so we want it to happen.
Yeah.
But there's also the second part of it, which is there is something this club has that you can't buy, and that is culture, that is support, that is a feeling, that is heart, that is, you know, it's blood, it's family. And if they get that, and if we just allow ourselves to believe the situation in which they love and believe in that, then it makes total sense why they would not knock down somewhere like Fenway Park and why they haven't knocked down Anfield.
Exactly.
And why they did that amazing work with the main stand. So that was interesting to get an insight as to how he feels about the owners. And then it led on to Hicks and Gillette. To hear our current CEO talk about Hicks and Gillette was interesting because he goes, yeah, it's interesting because he used the analogy of they were not people who saw Liverpool Football Club. So Hicks and Gillette did not consider Liverpool as patient capital. That's what he, that was his quote.
Yep.
Hicks and Gillette, unfortunately, saw Liverpool as an undervalued asset and they were not patient with the club. They just saw it as something that was undervalued and then they wanted to. So this is the example he used. He tried to buy it like a condo, do it up and then sell it. Or that's what they did. That's what they were trying to do. So it's interesting to hear the complete difference between Fenway Sports Group and Hicks and Gillette. And I think there's got to be times where we've got to be grateful for owners like that, right?
Owners like Hicks and Gillette?
No, not like Hicks and Gillette. I mean our current owners,
In
comparison to Hicks and Gillette. Although, if there was no Hicks and Gillette, there'd be no FSG, but I'm not at all promoting that time of our...
You had me a bit worried for a second there. Mm-mm. Maybe looking back, we can appreciate where we are now because of what happened back then. But I think looking at exactly what FSG have done since they've come in, they've listened to the fans, they've understood the history of the club. And it's exactly like what they've done with the Boston Red Sox as well. And I don't think we could be any luckier for the fact that we're still at Anfield and that we're actually looking to improve and grow Anfield and the area around it. And we could not be more thankful to have owners like what we do today.
Absolutely. And the club is very healthy at the moment. And that's what we got from the presentation, mm-hmm. how healthy the club is. And that's a point to... That's why it was so interesting to hear it, you know, straight from our CEO's mouth. Because the manager is right. The fan interaction is right. The players are right at the club. It feels like now the owners now feel right because we're buying top talent. We're in the Champions League. Ale, ale, ale is playing all around the globe. We've got one of the best players on the planet, or some of the best players on the planet in Mohamed Salah, Virgil van Dijk, Alisson, Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino. And then beyond that, we've got young players coming in. We've got a local Scouser and Trent. The whole club feels healthy. And that's important. The club is healthy and the presentation he gave us showed that. And it also showed that there was an interesting stat. I think he'd had all these bullet points in terms of interaction with the fans. This is something that Peter Moore, given his, because he came in at EA Sports when they were at their lowest. And when he left, they were at their highest. So they were voted worst video game.
Worst video game company in the USA.
In the USA in like, what, 2000 and maybe two when he comes in?
Roughly.
Or whenever it was, whatever year that was back in the past. And by the way, keep this in mind because it comes onto our next little question that someone asked. But keep in mind, about 7 years ago, whilst at EA Sports, Peter Moore was asked about the future of gaming. And his answer was, I see games moving towards free-to-play and also microtransactions. I don't see games being these big $100 things anymore where you just get this game and that's it. I see them actually being free. So instead of imposing a specific price limit on the game, you actually make it free to play and then people can buy along the way. And what do we see now? 7 years later, we see Fortnite. We see Apex Legends has just come out. We see games on the mobile phone like Hearthstone. Tell you what, this guy predicts stuff. And that comes to the next question. Someone said, Liverpool have often been rumoured to be part of a quote-unquote European Super League. And so Peter Moore, the CEO of Liverpool, was asked about this. And what is his response? I see it happening.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unfiltered. He goes, it'll happen. He goes, it will happen. The European Super League will happen. I think he did a good job in backtracking from that. Not saying that he needed to backtrack, but he also said, look at the Champions League now. It's pretty much a Super League already. But he thinks that it's something that could happen in the future. He says, whether it's in our lifetime, who knows? But he thinks it'll happen. He says the next UEFA Champions League will be a Super League. Is it 10 years, 20 years? We don't know.
Yeah, it was actually really interesting. Also, it's been a very hot topic for quite a while. And also, there was the rumours a while back about, was it the Juventus president, I think, had been in negotiations to try and set things up or whatever it was. And to hear Pierre Moore talking about it and talking about, is it going to be in our lifetime? Is it going to be in 10 years, 20 years? Well, if you look at the Champions League now, we've pretty much got that already. I think what was really interesting was talking about how do we protect the domestic leagues.
And he was very sure and very certain to say, yeah. Well, no, Liverpool do want to protect the domestic yeah. leagues. And if any of this will impact domestic leagues in any way, then Liverpool are not interested.
Yeah, no, exactly that. That was his priority. I think the reality is football is going to change in some way, shape or form. How it changes in that sense when it comes to a European Super League or how the UEFA Champions League grows, we don't know yet. But something is coming.
Can you explain? Do you know much about the Super League? Is the idea? Because people are saying protecting the domestic leagues. Does that mean that the Super League is we take Liverpool and Manchester and Man City out of England and we put them in a different league and they don't participate in yeah. the Premier League anymore? Is that the idea? Or is that the rumor?
It's the rumor. So there's never been a.
Oh really?
There's never been an official. Hey guys, there's going to be a European Super League in some way, shape, or form. It's always just been whispers. Oh, I think it might have been one of the German newspapers, Bild. I think maybe I might have said, oh, there's been rumours that so-and-so are organising a European Super League. And I think initially what the discussion points were, there might be 8 teams, maybe as far as 16 teams, who would actually compete solely in this European Super League for a number of years. So I think you had teams like Liverpool, Man United, Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal, Real Madrid, Barcelona, AC, Inter Milan, Juventus, a few other teams as well, who would mainly participate in this.
By the way, it's the old European club, because back in the day yeah. it used to just be the team who came first
yeah.
in Europe. And so they actually expanded it. Now they're looking to bring it back down again.
Yeah, and I think the initial rumour was these teams would compete purely on a European stage. They would not play domestic.
Okay, wow, that's the rumour.
That was the rumour. And obviously, with social media nowadays...
But that makes sense as to why Peter's yeah. come out and said, no, we do not want to leave the domestic league. So if a European Super League happens, it'll happen in conjunction with domestic leagues.
Correct.
And that's why he said it already happens in the UEFA Champions League. I think what he may have meant there was, you look at the Champions League, who are the final six? Or who are the final eight? Who are the final 16? It's always the same big clubs.
It's always the same teams.
So who cares about all these group stages?
Yep.
At the end of the day, the last 16 is always the same clubs. It's very rare that you get an outlier. So I think what they're basically trying to do is maybe they're saying, let's make... So at the moment, we've got the UEFA Champions League and the Europa League.
Yes.
So maybe what they're trying to do is have the Europa League, the Champions League, and then the Super League, and just take those 16 clubs that perform... at the same time against the same players, against the same teams all the time, in the same rounds, just take them out of the Champions League and put them in another league. So now you've got three. And it makes sense because it's another televised event for UEFA to make money.
And
that shouldn't affect domestic leagues.
It shouldn't. But the interesting thing that he said was, would we see potentially a change in how domestic football works? He talked about... a European Super League, maybe that gets prioritised, and then that's the weekend, and then domestic gets shoved into midweek.
Mm-hmm.
And
did he say this? Did I? Didn't
he, no, he said that, and I thought it was really interesting how he spoke about the European Super League in terms of still protecting the domestic league,
mm-hmm.
but moving a domestic league to a weekday would I can't see. I mean, as a fan myself, obviously being overseas is a little bit different. But being a fan who, obviously, back home, how do you manage that? Because then there's so much. I mean, obviously, we do it already at the moment, being in the Champions League. But you know, you play 38 games in a domestic league, and then I don't know. It's quite an interesting one.
Very interesting, and we. It's incredible how honest that Peter was there. Yeah. But the thing that he said at the end, I've got this note here. He says, "No, we need to protect the domestic league, and at no point is Liverpool FC interested in damaging the integrity of the domestic league." So that's an important point to keep in mind. He was very emphatic about that. So that's good, because you know. It also there's all these rumors about Liverpool, are they in these discussions, and it's never black or white, it's always gray. So it's good also to get the stamp of approval on all this, was that Liverpool are not interested in ruining the integrity of the domestic 100%. Leagues, which is what everyone was worried about. They're like, do Liverpool want to, you know, are they part of this thing where they want to? It's like, well, maybe they've been contacted about these you know, about these plans, but by no means, like we said, are they challenging that integrity? The next thing was a question that I asked, which was basically, it's an interesting point. Basically, I asked Peter from the audience. I was only a couple of rows back. I just said to him, it's interesting that with the, and this is going on from what I said before, with the appointment of Jurgen Klopp as manager, the way that the team is performing on the field, the way the academy is sort of working at the moment, the health of the club, the strategy, the online strategy, fan involvement, and then Tony Barrett gets made fan liaison officer. Yourself, I said, I pointed at Peter Moore, you're now chairman, you're a lifelong Liverpool fan, not to say that our previous chairman was not, or our previous CEO, or, you know, was not, because he was, but having all of these people involved, and the main point I made was Tony Barrett, you know, when is it a chicken or egg situation? Did the owners say we need to connect more with the fans? Was there a natural connection to fans happening? Did Jurgen Klopp sort of promote this change, or what happened? Because it seems like everything is happening in tandem with one another. And we're now seeing in the last 12 months, 24 months, and to thank an outlet like the Anfield Wrap, a fan media outlet like them, they have really been good at documenting and challenging, you know, Liverpool Football Club and saying, what are they doing for fans? And they themselves are noticing, they're saying, they seem to be getting it right when it comes to fan involvement. And I asked Peter, when did this start? And, you know, what's your place in all of this? And Peter's response was, you know, it was measured at first, and then it was quite interesting after it, because his first response was obviously, you know, the club has become more, it obviously as a healthy club, it's become more connected with the fans. But when they brought in, when John Henry and Tom Werner brought in Peter Moore as chairman, he made it his mission. He said, we are going to connect with fans even more. So it was happening originally, but Peter Moore said, I am going to do it even more, even more, even more. He even said, you guys are going to get sick of it. And this is the quote I've got. He says, I'm often at odds with the owners who think that I may be doing too much fan involvement. Yeah. He then said, what other chairman or what other CEO of a football club gets on Twitter and runs their mouth the same way that I do? He goes, look, I get disparaged for it, maybe, but he goes, the club needs to feel like, or the fans need to feel like the club is listening to them. And I tell you what, there's no other way that we will feel like the club's listening to us than having the chief executive officer over a pint of beer chatting to us at Jock's Daily's in Los Angeles, California.
I still can't quite believe it happened, but it was a really interesting topic actually to discuss that. I think he said he was the only CEO in the Premier League who's on Twitter. I think he said obviously his main message to the owners when it came to fan engagement was we really need to be able to connect, and we really need to make ourselves closer.
And it was something he did with EA. It was something he was responsible at EA, was to get in contact with the gamers and find out what they want.
That's exactly right. And obviously the owners, I think, challenged and said, is that how much do we actually need to be doing? I think that obviously you can go on Twitter and you can see how much people want to interact with him, or how much he interacts back with people to make sure that the supporters do feel like they're heard, to feel like they are connected to the club. And it comes back to that local heart, global pulse again. That's, he created that. He believes in that. He wants to stand for that. Mm-hmm. And he wants to make sure that the club stands for that as well. It's, and the appointment of Tony Barrett as well is a clear sign of what the club are trying to do to bridge
and,
that gap.
And the way he explained it, obviously Tony Barrett was a very respected journalist and, you know, would write about Liverpool amongst other things in football. But I think that he said his main role is correspondence amongst various forms of fan correspondence or fan forums. He called it fan forums. I'm sure it's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
But it was... And it was great because when Tony Barrett was made fan liaison officer, he said the moment that they are not doing... The moment that they start making me a yes man, I quit.
Yep.
And he said... I even, like, we didn't mention the walkout. That was something that wasn't covered in this presentation. It may have been alluded to, but with the walkout, I remember, I think Tony Barrett was he part of, was he a chief officer at that stage? I don't know if he was. Maybe he wasn't.
I'm not sure.
Oh, I don't think he was, but he's been, I think it may have even been the away tickets, but something has happened for the Champions League. I think something happened with the allocation of tickets, but Tony Barrett has been in... He's been in his position when something controversial has happened.
Yep.
And he, in any other situation, if the club had said to him, can you go out there and just be a yes man, that situation hasn't arose for him because he genuinely thought, no, this is what's happening. And he's gone on Twitter and explained the position of the club. And he's always said, if they tell me to say something that I don't believe in, that's when I quit. And so far, he hasn't quit. And he's a lot of people take him for, at his word. So it's been great to have someone like that in that position, because we know the longer he keeps that job, the longer the club is doing stuff that a fan would want, because Tony Barrett is a fan. Well, first and foremost, you don't have a yes man in control of your fan correspondence via fan forums and all that sort of stuff. So that's also, that was great that Peter Moore also addressed that and said that's been a very important step, and the longer they keep someone like Tony in there, the better.
Yeah, no, 100%.
It's interesting as well as a funny little story that Peter mentioned where he goes, yeah, you know, he used the analogy or he used the thing of, you know, sometimes the owners aren't too pleased with how much I am involved with the fans. And he goes, me personally, I don't really see it as a negative. He goes, however, there is a downside because... I don't know if you guys know, but there was a certain... This is him talking. He goes, there was a certain situation with a centre-back that we wanted to buy from Southampton, Virgil van Dijk.
You may have heard of him.
You may have heard of him, he said. And he goes, and obviously it didn't go to plan. And he said that and everyone started laughing. So it was really cool to get him, you know, talking about this, you know, in a jovial sense, in a jovial emotion. But he said, one of the downsides of my increased interaction on Twitter was that people now notice me and they feel like that they have, you know, an increased right to come up and talk to me. He goes, I'm always willing to listen to fans. And so he went to Starbucks and apparently he was in one of the only Starbucks in, I don't think there's a Starbucks in Liverpool, I think he was mentioning. Or wherever he was at a Starbucks. And a local fan came up to him and said, you should have bought VVD instead of Starbucks, you fucking knobheads. And he even did, he goes, pardon my French. And he said, people were paying him out going, instead of sitting there buying Starbucks, you know, you should be out there buying Virgil van Dijk. So 6 months later, of course, van Dijk was purchased. But it's interesting, he gets himself into a little bit of hot water because of how much he does interact with the fans. But you know what? That fan was addressed. Peter Moore responded. And that's what fans want. They sometimes want to know, and sometimes I do criticize the club, and it's getting better. I criticize about how secretive they do want to be. And sometimes, you know, even Nish from the couch does say, you know, sometimes it's professional to have the club operate at a level of secrecy, and that is good. And I think Jurgen Klopp seems to be that style of manager. But on the other hand, sometimes we do want to know, and it's great to hear this from our chief executive officer about, yeah, look, it didn't go to plan. Some people told me off. And I chatted to them about it, and you know, it wasn't a disaster. And if we just relate to each other as humans, then we're more willing to forgive each other as humans, you know.
Yeah.
But I want to go on to the next question, which was very interesting. It was to do with the Anfield Road End, the Annie Road End, which is a, I guess that's a very big talking point considering a lot of things that fans want are they want more seats. And he addressed it, and he said, this was interesting, he said that they currently have a permit that expires in September of 2019. The permit is to add a further 4,200 seats, so it's I think borderline approved or something about it is ready to go. I think they've got permission with the residents or whatever.
Yeah.
However, the way in which we gather the revenue for that 4,200 hasn't been discussed yet. And this is when the only mention towards the walkout was came about. Now, he didn't mention the walkout itself, but he just said, we can't raise ticket prices because we've agreed to halt them.
Freeze them.
Yep. We freeze them. I don't know if he even said if it's frozen for 3 years or if it's just frozen indefinitely.
No, I think it's what he said was it's now the third year, I believe, they've frozen the ticket prices.
Uh-huh.
From memory, yeah.
Yeah, right. So he said we can't raise ticket prices. So he said, firstly, he doesn't think the 4,200 is enough. So he thinks they're going to have to redo that agreement and they want to redo it to 7,200. And then he said, if we were to do the 7,200 without the rise in ticket prices and, of course, without hospitality areas to drive revenue, he said it would take 8 years to pay it back. Now, their projections would be much lower if they were to raise ticket prices. He did not say that, but I'm assuming it would be a lot quicker to pay it back if you were to raise prices. So they're just trying to find out, where do we get that revenue from? Some people would argue, sell a player like Coutinho. Why don't you use that money? But they're not trying to be a club that when they get revenue, you spend it straight away. You want to try and use organic revenue to pay back things. So it was interesting that that he did say the 4,200 isn't enough. They want to add it. They want to increase it to 7,200. However, they're going to have to address the local residents because I'll get you to talk about that a bit more, James, in terms of how they are helping the local residents and the people in those postcodes, how they have, you know, try to compensate them as much as possible and try and get their say. And they do not want to force them into anything. But the last thing he said was on the Annie Road was the first one was it's 4,200 at the moment. It expires in September. Once it expires, they've got to renegotiate, a new plan. The new plan is for 7,200. But then he said, considering that that's going to take 8 years to pay back, Kirby is the priority at the moment. And he did show us photos of the new Kirby training ground. And he said, we want our first grade, we want our reserve grade, our youngsters, our teenagers, our kids, all in the same complex. They even had more fields. I think he said something about lending out fields to... Oh, that's right, for community purposes.
And that's exactly what... One of the main talking points from the presentation before even started talking about the questions was actually it's about what do we, obviously, yes, we're a football club, we want to expand the stadium, but there's people who actually live around us. There's actually communities around us, and it's not just communities of people who just go to work, come home, and have dinner every night. These are people who are actually probably at the lower end of the scale, who are suffering poverty, who are really struggling at the moment, especially in this day and age. Hence why there's a lot of worker and food banks, everything like that.
That was a huge point that they said. That's a really big thing. And they even said that match goers who go to the average match day fan can go to Tesco, buy food, and then drop it off.
At the three points at the stadium.
So that's something that if anyone here is listening to the podcast, if you're in the UK or if you're overseas and you travel to Liverpool, that's something that you can do to help out, because that's a main thing is to help feed people who don't have enough money to feed themselves. Still go on with the local residents.
So one of the most impressive things was maybe most football clubs would just turn around, we've got the money, we can build this brand new fantastic facilities where we can have these training grounds where we can bring in all our teams, everything like that. We can give it back to local communities. We can expand a stadium. We can grow a stand. But what he actually said was, it's not as simple as that. And if it could be that simple, then great. But they don't want it to be that simple. They want to make sure they're engaging with the local community. This is what we want to do. This is why we want to do it. What do you think? What more can we do to be able to support the local community with what we're doing today? And I think the example with the Kirby expansion was it's not just about bringing every single Liverpool team to that one place, whether you're the under eights or whether you're the first team, the women's team, whoever you are. What can we give to the local communities? What can we give to the local teams, the schools, those who are disadvantaged to be able to use these facilities as well. Mm-hmm. There were so many examples.
They had an interesting one with the they called it walking football.
Yes, that's the one I was thinking.
For people over the age of 70, 60, or whatever age you can, but basically the football, the rules are you're not allowed to run. So there's a story about an 82-year-old gentleman who said, "Excuse me, could I come in and play a bit of football? I'm sorry, but I'm 82 years old. You know, am I still allowed to play?" And they're like, "Absolutely, come in." And I think, is it Alan Kennedy?
Alan Kennedy
is also playing in the side as well. And this was an initiative that they had to try and get, you know, guys who are, you know, who are retired,
widowed,
and they, you know, they've sort of, you know, maybe they've lost that sort of, I don't know, or they've got a dampened joy, you know, for life or whatever, and now they've got this opportunity to play football again, and they call it walking football. And then the funny thing was, the twist of the story was that they played a game, and then this gentleman came off and goes, "I'm sorry, Peter, I've told you to," or was it Peter or Alan or whoever he told, "I've told you a bit of a lie. I'm not 82 years old. I'm actually 92, or is he either 90 years old or 92?
Yeah,
and he's sitting there playing walking football, and because of the, you know, the restrictions that you don't have, all these, you know, older people are able to to live out their dreams as they want. And they had another example. I mean, not to say that men play football, women do yoga, but they do have another initiative Peter Moore's wife runs. And they do this in around the areas in the academy.
They actually do it in one of the stands.
In
one of the main rooms in the stands.
And it's a similar thing, but for the older ladies who don't want to play football. I'm sure they can play walking football as well, but they can also do yoga. And so they're trying to, you know, start up these initiatives for local residents. So this was really interesting that, you know, and again, the cynic will say, like, what else are they doing? But it's like, well, it's a good start. You know, it's great initiatives to do for people in the area, you know, who, you know, the football club takes so much out of Liverpool and also from the global community. So anything that they can do to give back firstly to the local community and then globally, is incredible. Go on to the next question. What a question this is. Do Liverpool need to sell to buy? Wow, what a daredevil this guy was. And he goes, "We are not a sell to buy club. We are not a sell to buy club." What you saw with Coutinho, he goes, "I know that question's going to come out." Because he goes, "We did not," because basically someone said, "Did it make it easier to buy Van Dijk and then in the future to buy Alisson and Keita and Fabinho with the Coutinho money?" And then Peter Moore's answer was, "We did not use Coutinho money to buy them. They were already scouted.
Yep.
There were already places in the squad that that we thought needed to be filled, and we would have bought them anyway." He said, "What you saw with Coutinho was a club come along like Barcelona, unsettles him. He starts questioning, you know, where he should be playing. All of a sudden, he gets a bad back, and then the player leaves the club." And that's was put by Peter Moore. And again, right at the end of that was, that's the situation. Liverpool have plans to buy players. If a club like Barcelona comes in and unsettles someone, that happens. Their player gets sold. There was no plans to sell that player, and they did not plan on a huge sale to then fund future purchases. They were always going to happen, which is a really great point.
That was actually really refreshing, because I think everyone's always like, "Oh, well, because we sold Coutinho, we could get the Van Dijks, we could get the Alissons, everything like that." But the interesting point that he actually spoke about was how long they had actually been scouting Alisson.
That was really interesting.
Yeah, how long they've been watching Alisson, and they had earmarked him. They said he would be the perfect player to come in. And then when he talked about Coutinho becoming unsettled, and Jurgen Klopp, as much as he didn't want to lose a player, as soon as he became unsettled and his mind was elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
Jurgen Klopp said, "Well, see you later."
Yeah.
That's it.
And we got an insight, and what that's what sometimes fans need, the situation to arise to then believe the future situations that arise as a result. But I always said this from day one. I thought the only people that wanted to keep a hold of Coutinho were probably FSG and the ownership, because they were like, "No, this is a matter of pride. This is our best player." And then Jurgen Klopp was the one whose hands were tied and said, "I don't want the player anymore. If he doesn't want to be here, let him go." And they said, "No, let's try and keep a hold of him." And they couldn't convince the player to keep on going. And he pseudo went on strike. But and that's not Peter Moore's words. That's just us speculating. Yep. But yeah, we got another thing about, you know, donations. This was one point that basically someone said, what can we do as global, as the global pulse? Because we do want to give, we do want to, you know, give money into food banks and whatnot. He said, look, to be honest, the food bank stuff is usually for the local support, for the match going experience. However, the LFC Foundation provides funding for food banks to try and feed people in Liverpool. So if you are a foreign supporter and you do want to, you know, you do want to pulse, pump blood into the heart of the local community, you can always do that. He said through your OLSC, your official Liverpool Supporters Club, and you know, whatever scarves and whatever purchases you make, the Supporters Club can actually funnel money back into the LFC Foundation. So this is something for LFC New South Wales, LFC LA, any supporters club who are members of supporters clubs or committee members who are listening to this podcast. That's something that you can do. So I would recommend that, you know, all of us as global fans try and think of ways as much as possible to give to the LFC Foundation, because that was a huge part of the presentation. Peter Moore was saying how much the LFC Foundation does. And that is, again, you know, the walking football, all that, I'm sure all of that comes under the umbrella of the LFC Foundation. So it's great, as much as we can help the local community as possible, the more that we are thanking literally the city of Liverpool for what they're doing in hosting this fantastic club. A really cool question came about LFC women and how do profits go back into the women's team. Now, this was Jordan. Jordan is a good friend of the couch. She's been on the couch, former couch member. There we go. But she's very, you know, a very passionate LFC LA committee member. And she's very passionate about the women's team. I don't think many people on the planet are as knowledgeable about the LFC women's team as Jordan is. But she said, you know, Liverpool making £109 million a year, you know, are the women seeing it? And then Peter Moore said he's very passionate, so passionate that he didn't like the name LFC Ladies. He wanted it to be LFC Women. We've seen that change happen. And Peter said it was something that he instigated. But he said that he's been very involved in, you know, the hiring of management, and there have been some management changes this year. But he said that they were playing on a bad pitch in a rugby league stadium in Widnes. He put them, so apparently there was a relationship with Tranmere Rovers. Now the women are playing on good pitches. Apparently before they were staying in, you know, separate apartments and they had to drive all over the place. Now, in the last couple of years or the last 12 months, the women have now waterfront apartments that they all stay in together to increase team bonding.
Yep.
They've trained together. They now live closer together. They're relocating a lot of them. So they do have, you know, teammates and stuff around them. We see that a lot with the men's team, where they're often neighbors and whatnot. And yeah, it was really great to hear him say that. And you know, we've got some great players there, but it's good to see. Firstly, you just need to see the surroundings change, and then hopefully we will see, you know, a similar revolution happen with the team that what we do see in the US. And I think the US has got great, great coverage and great quality with their women's football.
Yeah, it was. I think the keynote from that one was actually treating the LFC women's team as professionals, because the reality is they are professional athletes, and so all these changes that has come across in the last 12 to 18 months, put them up in waterfront apartments so that they're all together, moving them to Prenton Park so they can play on a proper surface as well. In fact, Aidan even said, he when he can, he attends every game.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to every game that he can. And the thing that I actually enjoyed the most was when they hired the new manager, Vicky, she was actually doing work for the LFC Foundation.
I've written that down here, but I wasn't sure about that.
No,
but you remember that. Okay, no, I'm great. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was about to mention that.
I do retain some information. what he said was when the previous manager left after losing to Arsenal, Peter Moore went across the globe trying to find a new manager, but then he realised that it was right in front of him the whole time.
There you
go. So then hiring from within.
That's a really good. I mean, that's how the boot room started. So maybe we've got our own another boot room happening with the women's team. There was, because we're coming up to, we're almost running out of time here. I do want to make sure we do get along all the questions that we, okay, this is a really important one, which was the question of ownership, minority ownership. The question was, are the club looking to sell? Firstly, are they looking to sell the club at all? And secondly, are they looking to have minority ownership in the club? And the answer from Peter Moore was, firstly, they do not want to sell the club at all. Secondly, in terms of minority ownership, they are not looking for minority ownership. However, they would accept generous offers.
Yes.
So if someone comes in and says, we want to start, you know, because I think there was even a few questions about Arsenal and how Arsenal works. It's like, how would you avoid that situation where you've got two owners fighting? He said, well, the only percentage we would think about giving away is like 5%.
Yep.
And that's if they come in with a ridiculous... He goes, if someone comes in with $1 billion to purchase 5% of the club, he goes, yeah, we're going to accept it. So that's why he says, we're not looking... but we're open, because you've always got to be open. You can't just say zero and no. As it stands, apparently there's been a few minority ownership requests.
Yep.
And he says none of them have been serious. He says the minute we try and get on the phone with them, we realize they're not actually serious. And you know what? That must mean that the club has got a specific valuation. And firstly, firstly, they don't want to give that bigger percentage away. And from that small percentage they do want to give away, they want to give away at a high price.
Yes.
So that's when people are scared off. So I tell you what, if that's the situation, that's a pretty cool situation to me. I don't really mind it.
No, I wouldn't complain either. I think the comforting thing is knowing that FSG, they don't want to sell.
No.
Obviously, I think...
And Peter Moore even said, why would they?
Well, that's exactly it. I think people might still have horror nightmares from the Hicks and Gillette era. FSG are here to stay. They are here to continue to grow Liverpool from where they started only a few years ago to the track that we're on now and continue that path.
There was an interesting question. Yeah, that, absolutely. Going on to the next question, really. Again, these are quick fire questions. But this one was... again, from it's an American audience. They were questioning Pulisic, and did Liverpool go for him? And then it's great. Peter Moore's answer was, "We already had people in his position. He's the future of American soccer and a very promising player, but he just didn't quite fit into Jurgen Klopp's plans." Was the quote,
and that was it.
That was it. I just thought that was great insight because if you were to ask Jurgen Klopp about that, he goes, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, like it probably would be that whole, the club has probably said, don't say anything. But then we get this Peter Moore aspect where he's like, just tell him, sometimes just tell him. And so he's just gone,
that's it.
Pulisic did not fit into Klopp's plans. We already have players in that position. So it's very interesting. If you now look at where Pulisic plays, that's where the club now feels like they are well stocked. Yep. So it's what type of player is Pulisic? We can sort of deduce from that piece of insight.
Yep.
Maybe we can actually, this is nothing that Peter Moore has said. We are now just speculating. I mean, what do we consider him? And what are the positions we already have? We already have attacking midfielders. I think that's maybe what they saw him as.
Yes.
We have Shaqiri. Sadio Mane can play there. They probably didn't see him as much of a winger. So they maybe didn't see him as much as, they didn't see him as a Salah type, a high goal-scoring winger or forward. They didn't see him as a forward. They may have seen him as a creative midfielder.
That's
Oxlade Chamberlain is your creative midfielder. Adam Lallana is still at the club. James Milner can often get forward and break forward from there. Gini Wijnaldum can. Jerdan Shaqiri, who we've already bought. Sadio Mane plays like an attacking midfielder. Roberto Firmino plays as attacking midfielder. Divock Origi plays as a striker or left winger. Daniel Sturridge at the moment. So given all that, it doesn't make sense to buy this player. And he doesn't have the numbers as well. So if he had the numbers, maybe we would have seen him, but didn't fit into Klopp's plans.
And maybe and again, this is purely speculation, but last night after the event, I was driving home and I had that one on my mind. I was thinking back to when he spoke about Alisson. A lot of people thought we bought Alisson after the Champions League final because of what happened with Lloris Karius, everything like that. But when he spoke about that Alisson had been tracked for such a long time, I thought to myself, well, maybe we didn't go for Pulisic because maybe he wasn't the right fit. Maybe he wasn't the right mold. Maybe there's someone else that they already have who they might be thinking to potentially bring in the summer. I might be speaking crap. I have no idea. But based on how he spoke about previous transfers and we're not needing to sell to buy and how the scouting system works and all the effort that goes into it, maybe there was someone else that they might have seen to say, well, actually, maybe we won't go for Pulisic. Yeah, he's a great player. He's a fantastic, and he will be. He will be the face of American soccer for the next generation. But maybe we saw someone else. Maybe there's someone else out there that they see.
Very interesting. Well, we're coming up to 55 minutes, almost an hour, so we will start wrapping it up. There was a question about ticketing. I think we should mention it because it's a good opportunity as well, given that Peter Moore's been so generous in letting us use this information. Ticketing has often been a contentious issue, especially with the whole walkout that happened a couple of seasons ago. Was it two or three seasons now?
It was two seasons ago.
Two seasons ago, yeah. I remember the game that it was because a player, it was actually a certain player's, I think it was his last goal, Adam Johnson scored in that game. Yeah, we don't want to talk about that player, but I remember the game because it would have been against Sunderland in that sense. Yep. He scored a free kick. And it was when I'm like, fucking bloody Mignolet standing far to the right, trying to, you know, goading Adam Johnson to score in that corner. But that was the game. So whenever that was, if you remember it. But he said, ticketing. So basically people were saying access to tickets. Is there a way to make tickets, season tickets cheaper, just like they do in the Bundesliga? And so... Peter Moore started by saying, look, we've frozen season ticket prices and general admission prices. He said for 3 years. So I think it's probably more what you said. I actually thought that was they are frozen for 3 years, but you're saying it's been frozen for 3 years. Yes. And I think they're going to continue to be. Or
yeah, I think that was what he was suggesting.
That's the plan at the moment.
They don't want to. I think the tag that he used was... football has always been a working man's sport. And even though obviously football's a huge business nowadays, especially with the big TV money contracts that they're getting nowadays, it's important that the prices do not escape the grasp of those everyday people who want to go and watch their team play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he also accentuated the £9 ticket scheme for the L postcodes that do surround Anfield, is that right?
So that was L4, L5 and L6. So there's a lottery for 500 tickets, obviously very high demand for those tickets. But that way, anyone in those postcodes, which I believe were the three most impoverished postcodes, potentially, I might be wrong here.
Yeah.
But that way, those people in those postcodes get the opportunity to attend a game for the price of £9.
Mm-hmm. And that's giving back to the community as well. But then he did address the whole Bundesliga thing. Now, Bundesliga clubs, on average, mostly are supporter-owned. Yes. Or they probably all supporter-owned.
I think they all are.
Now, that makes it a lot easier for them to govern what the ticket prices are. And look, as a result, they have lower ticket prices. But what Peter Moore pointed out was they have less spending power because the less revenue you're getting in from those tickets, the less spending power you have. Now, the argument probably is Premier League clubs also have your TV money.
Yes.
So what, you're only getting money from that, you know, ticket sales and all that? We can put that to one side. However, he did say, which was so true, he goes, well, look, they've got cheaper tickets, but can they buy Virgil van Dijk?
And that was the rally.
And so it's sort of like, and once upon a time, by the way, Liverpool would have argued, but we never buy Virgil van Dijk. We never buy Mohamed Salah. We never buy, but that's been happening in the last 2-3 years. So how can we complain?
Exactly.
So that was interesting. The German league has always been either buying from within or having a marquee player. They can never consistently buy players the way that we are now. We've got VVD, we've got Alisson, Keita was expensive, Fabinho was 40 mil, Oxlade-Chamberlain himself was 40 mil,
yep.
So Salah was 36 to 40. So, If we want to be able to do this stuff, I guess it comes at a bit of a premium. And that's just something that we have to accept in the Premier League. It's a more expensive league for everybody. And then he says TV rights. See, that's what I've written here. TV rights usually pay the difference.
That's right.
So as we wrap up, I do want to... This was kind of interesting. Just going to be a one-liner, the Liverbird and the LFC badge. So the Liverbird was only brought in for the 125-year history. That was last year's kit. Was that the first time we had used the bird, or did we use it the year before?
I think we had used it in the last couple of years. I think the way that the badge was done with the 125 centenary.
Oh, okay. Was brought in the badge, but yeah. Basically, people were wondering were we going to bring back the Hillsborough Gate style crest.
Yes.
And he said it's a possibility given that it is the 30th anniversary of Hillsborough. But basically, we've had record sales in terms of the retro style kits. Now, the retro style kits are also firstly simple. And look good, and that gets your middle to younger generation. But your older generation love the fact that how much they look like the older kits.
Exactly.
So basically, apparently, last season's kit was the highest selling kit ever in Liverpool's history,
yep.
Only topped by this year's kit.
Correct.
And so they're like, well, should we change a winning formula? So they're tossing up between those two ideas, but the reason why that single liver bird with the 125 years is continuing on is because the kit sold so well. So and then he addressed changing New Balance, and he said... Yeah,
that was interesting, actually.
Yeah, he said, look, if New Balance... He basically said, this was really interesting. So this is going to be the final thing as we wrap up, nearly at an hour here. So I hope you guys have enjoyed it, by the way. It's freaking insight, and Peter Moore was talking for 3 hours, so I tell you what, we've done a good job summarizing it for you. But the last thing that I'm going to say is he did mention, he goes, I thought I'd bring up the whole thing about the sponsorship deal. He goes, we've got 1 year left with New Balance, but we are now negotiating. And he goes, nothing against New Balance. If New Balance can come back with an improved offer, then we'll stay with them because we love them. And they've brought out the most successful kits. And you know what? Talking on behalf of the coach, Peter Kafanis, who was not a big fan of New Balance, he said, to get Peter to admit that New Balance is good, you know you're doing something right, New Balance. So there you go. That's what you should use in your next shareholder meeting. Because like, how have we been successful? Peter said that our kits are pretty decent. But it's not just the kits, it's also the manager wear. I think Jurgen Klopp's done a great job of marketing
the manager training.
The range, the training gear, the tracksuit gear, the range of, whether it's, fashion gear or whatever. But New Balance has done a very good job. And he said, we would love to continue that. So that's not out the window. But what he did say was, Liverpool are on a different stratosphere right now. And he said the money that clubs like Arsenal and Manchester United, and he used Arsenal because apparently, who are they with now, Nike?
Puma.
Oh, they're with Puma.
Yeah.
So he said he singled them out because he goes, I don't like to say it because I don't think the club is performing right now, but the deal that they are on is one of the biggest ones in world football or at least in the Premier League. So he said, we are now demanding that money. And if New Balance can do that, then it's New Balance.
Yeah, well, but like you said, we know our value.
That's exactly it. We know our value. And he then said, if it's, Adidas, Puma, whatever, we're completely open to it, which was very interesting to hear again from the horse's mouth. I think we've pretty much covered everything.
I think we've ticked all the boxes and then some, actually.
We've ticked all the boxes, yeah. But it was an incredible night. The night was called An Evening with Peter Moore. We all got to have a pint with him. We all got to shake his hand, get a photo, ask our questions, and then also meet the guy personally ourselves. Peter Moore, thank you so much for all that information. He even interacted with the couch, liked a couple of our tweets. So we'll put this out, and hopefully you guys out there in fan media land, in podcast land, get an insight into, how the club is giving back to the community, how the club is trying to answer all of our questions. And I tell you what, we had the guy in the flesh doing it with us. So it was incredible. And thank you, Peter. And thank you, of course, to LFCLA, Joxer Dailies, Eugene, who's always taking care of us at the bar, all the staff there at Joxer Dailies, and of course Brian Montano, our fearless leader, and all the other committee members at LFCLA for making that night possible. It was incredible. Any last words, James? You had a good night, actually. Yeah, I introduced you to everyone.
Next time I go, I'm going to have to take name badges.
But it gets hard, doesn't it?
It does after a while, but it was very last minute for me. I didn't even know the event was on. I didn't even know you were actually in LA at the time.
Neither I to you.
Yeah, but it's all worked out perfectly, so I just want to thank everyone at LFCLA for their hospitality. It was great to meet as many people as possible. And I'm looking forward to coming back. And thank you for tonight's pod as well.
That's okay. Well, guys, there's been a lot of great content coming out for the LFC couch. And we feel like a second wind. And just as Liverpool feel a second wind going into the Champions League against Bayern Munich, the LFC couch is hopefully going to have a lot more great, juicy content for you. But this has been a great exclusive. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. An Evening with Peter Moore. I've been George. That's been James. We'll see you again next time.